from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It is Fan Evening Shift. Jeff Hathorn in tonight. 412-928-9370 is the number. We go out to the fan hotline right now, though, and joined by Post-Gazette columnist Jason Mackey. Jason, you've been a reporter for so long. Is the columnist really sunk in yet?
No, it hasn't.
Are you enjoying like giving your opinions about stuff, whereas before you kind of just had to report?
Yeah, you know, it's weird, Jeff. Like, I haven't gotten completely comfortable even hearing columnists. I don't know if I'm completely comfortable being a columnist. And, I mean, that's just being completely truthful with you and anybody listening. Like, I think, you know, I think we all have different styles. And some people, Paul Zeiss would be one that has no problem, you know, screaming at you, telling you exactly what they think. And I love that about Paul, and God bless him. And, you know, I'm wired a little bit differently, and I think that's okay. And my approach is going to be different. I feel like I've blended some reporting, and yeah, it's going to be a different type of story, different type of column that comes out. So I'm finding it. I feel like it's gotten better, but it's not where I want it to be yet.
Yeah. I think copying Zeiss would be a career mistake. And I mean that only from this standpoint. Even if I tried, I couldn't. He is so unique.
No, and I mean, to me, that's what makes a newspaper great. That's what makes any staff great. Like, you have different personalities. I'm not going to try to be Paul. I'd be silly if I would. But, you know, I do enjoy it. I like the variation. I like being around different teams. It's weird. I was just talking about this with my wife, actually, about how each, like, pocket of the year, and we've only had about 4+ months at this point, so there haven't been many pockets, but they all feel differently. You know, I'm trying to figure out what football is going to look like. Got a little taste of postseason hockey, or like the wind down of hockey into baseball. So they've all been fun, but it's just a matter of like, I want to go everywhere and do everything all the time, just like you do, you know, and you can't.
Yep.
So I'm having to like figure
we
out.
Try.
We try, but having to prioritize and figure out where to be.
Well, damn it, Jason. I thought baseball was going to be kind of keep the headlines, but a 10-game losing streak will run you right down those headlines. What do you make? It's good teams, but what do you make of, I mean, wow, this fell apart quickly.
I can feel you just sort of like looking around and palms up in the air. Like, I don't think any of us have a great answer for it. I don't think the Pirates have a great answer for it. I mean, if they had an answer for it, they'd fix it. One thing that keeps rolling around in my brain is hearing them sort of like downplay, you know, that it's a break, that it's a bad bounce. I don't like that. I think it's more than that. I think they would be silly, or, you know, I just don't agree with minimizing what's going on. Like, 10 games is a sizable losing streak. Where this has come from has been detrimental to their season and their progress. And I understand and respect those in it and what it's like to go through that. At the same time, you know, we're on the media side. I look at what Bob Nutting is expecting. I'm looking at where they're at in a rebuild, what fans want, what fans deserve. And they won 76 games last year. They darn well better win more than 76 this year, or I think you've got some problems. I can understand allowing, you know, how do they come out of this? How do they respond to this? Whatever. But, I mean, if this continues to snowball, I also wouldn't blame Bob Nutting and Travis Williams or whomever for saying, like, we can't have this. You know, this is just unacceptable in year five. Like, I wouldn't blame them one bit for having that stance.
So, Jason, I mean, it's going to take a run for them to get to 76 wins, considering what has just happened. What do you think the ramifications would be? I mean,
I don't think Shelton's back, just to put it plainly. If they finish with fewer than 76 wins, I don't think Shelton's back. I don't know how you can bring him back. I mean, that is the definition of a step backwards. You know, they've got 42 left. I think they'd have to go 20 and 22 to get to 76, if my math is right. It's not great. you know, 20 and 22 feels like a very steep hill right now. And, I mean, again, Bob Nutting said in January, and I think he reiterated it after the Sheets thing when he talked to us, that, like, the goal this year is the playoffs. The goal this year is competing, contending, all this stuff. The goal isn't to go backwards. And I think I would look at this year and say, like, you're not getting the most out of a team where money has been spent. You know, Bob's put out payroll where he thinks that they should be better. And people can disagree with that. But if the owner thinks that he's spent enough to put a winner on the field and the team wins fewer games than last year, I don't see why the owner wouldn't act.
The general manager comes into play here because you could defend what Derek Shelton has done by saying, well, what options does he have? Why doesn't he have more at his disposal? Where does that I don't want to know if blame is the right word, but where does that accountability come into play?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not big on saying it's this guy's fault, whether
right.
that's a player, whether that's somebody
yes.
in charge. Like, to me, that's so short-sighted. Like, Shelton's messed up in all of this. Carrington's messed up in all of this. The players have messed up in all of this. Nobody's blameless. So, I mean, you know, I look at Carrington's side of it, and I don't think he's traded well enough. You can evaluate what they got back for Starling Marte, Josh Bell, Jameson Taillon, Clay Holmes. You know, that is way, way, way too lopsided. And those trades on the other side, there's been enough runway, so you should see some production from the guys coming back. You know, if we look at last year's trades or something and try to evaluate them, like the Carlos Santana trade, and you say, oh, they haven't gotten anything from Johnny Severino. Well, he's 18. You know, they made these trades that I'm talking about in, you know, 2020 and 2021 as well. Like, that's enough time that the player on the other side of that trade should impact. Anyway, you know, Charrington trades have not been good enough. You haven't gotten enough internationally, and you've had time to do that to get those guys to develop them. You haven't done a good enough job drafting, I would argue. Like, Henry Davis, 2021, a college kid taking 1-1, should be in the major leagues and impacting the big league ball club. As it stands now, I don't know where he plays, and I don't know when he comes up. That's not good. The offense hasn't been good enough. The owner talked, you know, when he talked to us at the Sheets thing about needing to see more offense, and it hasn't improved since then. And they're standing by with Andy Haynes, and it makes absolutely no sense. Anyway, I'm just going on a rant, Jeff.
No,
I'm sorry.
I think all Pirate fans are right now going on a rant.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they stood in front of us, sat in front of us when they were hired and talked about this player-centric model, that we're going to do things that are individual for each player. We're going to reach each player individually. So what do? Now they have a one-size-fits-all offensive approach. What? That's the exact opposite of what you said you're going to do. That's the exact opposite of effective coaching. Don't have an offensive approach that fits everyone. Each player individually.
Right, which reminds me of what got them in trouble with the pitching staff not so long ago with Uncle Ray.
Exactly.
Was that they try to make everybody the same, and Tyler Glasnow is not the same as Jameson Taillon or Jeff Locke or whomever you want to say.
Yep, yep. Jack Sawinski cannot navigate an at-bat the same way Andrew McCutchen can. Don't ask him to. No offense, Jack. He can't think the way that Andrew McCutchen can. Don't ask him to. But he can't hit the ball a long way. Let him be aggressive. He's going to swing and miss sometimes. Okay, I understand that. I can live with it. If you hit 25 to 30 home runs, I can live with the strikeouts, but I want the aggression. And they've taken the bat out of his hands.
I do believe this. I don't know that if they were to make a managerial change that right now is the time. Because I think, to be fair, you play out the entire year. The emotional thing and the easy thing to do is to blame it all on Shelton and say, we're going to fire the manager. And I think it's a different scenario than, let's say, when Dan Bylsma was brought in or Mike Sullivan was brought in, because that was a team that was ready to win. I don't know that this team is ready to win, and I don't know that they have it. They're not in a position where they have time to make a comeback where they can get back in this, in my opinion. What do you think? Do you think if they're going to make a decision, just do it now? And here's the other thing I think can happen is, and I love Bill Stewart. Bill Stewart was a great man. God rest his soul. But because West Virginia made that move and then he won that bowl game, they had to hire him as head coach. If you hire, let's say it's Donnie Kelly, and Donnie Kelly does a great job, and you're almost committed to having to hire him, whereas maybe you wanted to bring in somebody else.
Yep. And I think you bring up a lot of great points, Jeff. Here's where I would go with this. I'm not saying this is where the Pirates are going to go. This is where, if I was running things, I would go. And I do think there's an argument for this if you're Bob Nutting. The first lever I would pull would be Andy Haynes. And I'd pull it soon, if not, like, you know, 5 minutes ago. I want to see how the team performs without Haynes. I want to see how the offense does with a different set of eyes, a different approach. Basically, Apple Z everything and say, you guys do what you do best. I want to see you be aggressive. I want to see, you know, like, try to reach each player individually and see what happens. I don't know. It may still stink. They may still play sloppy baseball. I think I would use this as sort of a line of demarcation for the rest of the season. I probably wouldn't get rid of Shelton. If I'm Bob Nutting, that move right there, I mean, if it saves things, then that's going to save me a heck of a lot of money down the road with Derek Shelton. If nothing changes, then I know this offseason I'm probably going to need to go in a different direction with Derek Shelton. And they're going to have to at least eat next year on his contract. You know, he was extended. 2025 would be that extension year. I still operate under the assumption that it was a one-year extension. I'm not reporting that, but, like, we know that they would have to eat money in 2025 if they fired Shelton this offseason. Donnie Kelly's a perfectly logical replacement for me. Universally respected around that clubhouse. Great baseball man, deserves his chance. He's interviewed a couple of places. I think he's very close to becoming a major league manager. Have no problems. If you see what you have without Haynes the rest of the way, if it looks good, you stick with Shelty, because I do think that's what they want to do. And if it doesn't, then you go to Don Kelly in the offseason.
As of yesterday, I've stopped looking at the wild card standings because it just ticks me off too much. After doing a couple of days of the pre- and post-game show and hearing all the angst, and understandably so, but assuming that they're not in this, which they're not, what would you do with Paul Skeens in September?
I'd let him get to about 150 to 160 and shut him down. I understand people would be upset about it. It would stink for home gates. The long-term health of Paul Skeens and his right arm should be the most important thing. And it stinks, but, you know, again, I was doing this math. I think I might have tweeted it, but, you know, five more starts, something like that, Jeff. And if they're as out of it as this looks like it could be, I'd shut him down, you know, 3 weeks to go in September, something like that. Again, I think it's going to be there are a couple inputs. You're basing it on the standings, how the rest of the team is playing. But again, we're saying if this current trajectory continues, if they tumble way out, you know they're bad. I'd let them get to 150, you know, 155, we'll say, and then shut them down.
We have some great producers, as you're aware of, Jason, here at the Fan. Joel Nelson is high on that list. He has a question for you.
All right.
Jason, so Jared Jones has given up multiple runs in both of his rehab starts with Indianapolis, less than ideal. Do you think he needs like another rehab start with those guys before he comes back to Pittsburgh, or you think he's good otherwise?
That's tough to say, Joel. I'd err on the side of yes. I'd err on the side of another rehab start. I don't want to rush him. That does nothing for me. I would like to see how those runs were allowed. Is his slider sharp? If the slider is sharp and he's just trying to get work in on his four-seamer and it's getting hit, or if he's trying to use his changeup and that's getting hit, that really doesn't worry me. But if I have to give an answer right now, I'd allow him to get comfortable. And if it's a couple runs, if he's, you know, if there's any signs at all that he might need a little bit more time, I'd wait.
It is Steelers season, at least preseason, and the final home game for like a month is scheduled for Saturday at 7 o'clock. Saw you at the game, obviously, on Friday night against Houston. What has, at this point, what has you excited and what has you worried about the Steeler team?
I like that, Jeff. I like that. What has me excited is the offense. That's probably a broad, broad category. But like, I like the number of times they went downfield in the last preseason game. I think Russell Wilson and or Justin Fields can have a very good year in this offense. I think they're going to be a pretty physical football team. I think their wide receivers can be better than many think. I guess what worries me, maybe the secondary outside of Joey Porter Jr., and Minka, of course, but like, you know, is that secondary going to be good enough? I'd like to think they would, but that just like the depth up front on the defensive line, even depth at linebacker, that's probably what concerns me. I'm very broad in these, Jeff. I don't like it. Maybe I should have been more specific. But
no.
I think they can be better offensively than many would think. And I just, if there's a thing that worries me, it's just how many points they give up.
It is still early, and it's tough to have definitive opinions about this team as much as we all offered opinions about everything, and fans do as well. We had a fan on the fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Say, ask me on a scale of 1 to 10, how much better the quarterback situation is than last year. Not comparing it to any other quarterback situation, but to last year. I went 7 out of 10. How do you think this quarterback group compares to the three they had last year?
Yeah, and I mean, it's unpopular to say we don't know, right? Like, we're not in the we don't know business. You have to know. You have to have an opinion, so... My real answer would be we don't know, because everybody thought Kenny Pickett was, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread last year, and that didn't work out too terribly well. I'm right at about a 7 or 8. 7 or 8 compared to last year. I mean, it turned out to be, you know, and I'm talking about, like, the bad parts of last year, not necessarily Mason Rudolph. Like, I like the way Russell Wilson and Justin Fields have commanded the offense. I like their ability to get the ball downfield. I like what Van Jefferson has done, frankly, opposite George Pickens. I've been one of the ones saying I don't think Brandon Ayuk is worth the trouble. Again, the offensive line, I liked what I've seen so far, but it's been in limited action. They ran the ball, I thought, decently well in their first preseason game. I mean, they shot themselves in the foot a lot and had to throw it, but you know, they moved it. They averaged 6 yards a play. And against the Texans, I think a lot of people sort of overlooked that. If they don't make some of the mistakes they did, they'd be in a pretty good spot. So anyway, guess a long-winded way of saying I think the quarterback play has been fine, and I think it will be fine.
Why do you think Brandon Ayuk is not worth it?
The money. I don't want to pay that much to a receiver. Like, I think they're going to have to pay Pickens. They're going to have to pay Broderick Jones. They're going to have to pay Joey Porter Jr. They're going to have to pay a quarterback. They're getting off on such a bargain under center that deal is not going to last forever. Like, a competitive quarterback right now, you're spending upwards of $40 million. And if this works out, like, their draft pick's not going to be great. You're not going to want to invest the draft pick there. You're probably going to need to invest the draft pick in, I don't know, defensive line is probably where I'd go at this point. But and there's no guarantee the following year the quarterback's going to be immediately ready. Like, you're probably going to need to spend on somebody, even if it's Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. What? And then you're going to – how do you pay two receivers, you know, $28 to $32 million? I don't think you can.
One thing I will agree with you on, it seems like running or wide receivers grow on trees. It's just that it doesn't help this year. That's the issue where I think Brandon makes a lot of sense, but, yeah, you're not going to bring him in for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, if he would come here for just this year, or if the you know, yearly cap hit was going to be lower – great. Like, I mean, I'd be all over Brandon Ayuk for 18, 19, something like that. I don't know, man. I don't know how you pay him and Pickens and then all the other guys you're going to have to also pay. I don't know how you make it all fit. I mean, maybe Omar does, and that'd be great if he could. To me, you're looking at two 1,000-yard seasons, a potential system guy, I don't know if he is or not. Like, you can look at fancy numbers, too, and talk about Brandon Ayuk being sure. really good, the potential top five guy in the NFL. I get that side of it. And I'm not saying, you know, for another team, it might make a lot of sense to spend $28 or $30 million. I just don't know if it is for the Steelers.
We're joined by Jason Mackey, columnist at the Post-Gazette. Jason, before you were a columnist, you covered the Pirates. Before the Pirates, it was the Penguins. here's a question I'm sure you never get. Why isn't Sid signed?
Yeah. Oh, man. I wish I had that one. I'd bottle it and sell it. At this point, Jeff, I'm going to chalk it up to a hockey summer, meaning like people go away. They don't do a bunch of work. I don't know how confident I feel in that answer, to be honest with you. Like, Kyle Dubas was in the office trading second round and fifth round and whatever the heck else. Nebulous draft picks. I'm willing to bet if he calls, I'm willing to bet he has Sid's number. He can call Sid.
I would hope.
And yeah, like that's what worries me here. Like, I don't have a great answer, but here's just where I'm looking at this Crosby situation. If you're Dubas or you're Sid and you want this to happen, doesn't it happen? Right? Like, if I'm Sid, I say, I want to be in Pittsburgh. Kyle, can we get this done? I'd like to have this over with. I just, you know, let's get this contract done. Here's what I want. How, if you're Kyle Dubas, do you say no? And then flip it around. If you're Kyle Dubas, you say, look, you're Sidney Crosby. You're not going to not be with the Penguins. Like, we got to get this figured out. Sid, I don't want to think about this anymore. Let's get this done. Like, what do you want? Let's hammer this out. I don't understand how it could be any more complicated than that, Jeff. I really don't. I mean, everything Sid has done for this city, what are you going to do, nickel and dime him? Get out of here. You know, maybe you can work on the years of the deal. Maybe. But, like, that shouldn't take this long.
What, for the most optimistic hockey fan in Pittsburgh, I mean, what is the ceiling for this group? Like, it's been talked about over the last couple of years, well, if they could just get in, they can make a run. Of course, they haven't gotten in. Like, is there that type of ceiling that this team could get in and make a run? Or is there just way too many things would have to go right for that to be realistic?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see how they can go any further than the second round. And even that, I know a lot of people will listen to that and think, like, you're nuts. They ain't getting to the second round. And I respect that. I'm just saying, like, the ceiling.
Right.
You know, it... A wildly successful season for the Penguins would probably be, you know, David Quinn getting through to Erik Karlsson in the power play and that part improving. You know, us learning that Ricard Raquel wasn't completely healthy last season and becomes a productive top six wing once again. Drew O'Connor growing up and taking another step playing with Sid. The mishmash of I don't even know what in the bottom six works. Like, Anthony Beauvillier captures what he had with the Islanders and becomes a useful player there. You know, what's his face, Kevin Hayes, maybe he, you know, is able to resuscitate his career. I mean, you could be halfway decent down the middle with Malkin, Eller, and Hayes below Sid. You know, maybe Tristan Jarry bounce, but like, that's a really rosy picture, but I still think that only gets them to about the second round. So I don't know. And that, I guess I pick that up and I take it to the Sid discussions, and this is like the nuclear option, right? But if you're Sid and you want a chance to win a cup, well, darn it, it's probably not here. And that's an uncomfortable topic for everybody. And it, like, the Penguins probably need to rebuild. And if Sid wants to chase a cup, it's probably best to do it somewhere else. But those are both very uncomfortable conversations for either side to have.
My skin is crawling, Jason. It is. It is uncomfortable.
Am I wrong, though?
No. And listen, it's not even as much that the Penguins this offseason or the last offseason kind of put themselves in this spot. It was the signing of Letang and Malkin to a contract extension. It's like, okay, we're not going to rebuild. We still think we can go for it. And sadly, I think that's taken a team that's average and dragging that average out until they can crater and become good again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, I don't want Sid to play for another team. It would repulse me just as much as anybody else. I also wouldn't begrudge him if he said, look, we can't win a cup here, and I want to win a cup. I could never fault a player for making that decision. But if they would come to that conclusion to undo all of what you just said, Jeff, and you know, try to find a place for Malkin, try to find a place for Letang, you know, Montreal, something like that. That would make sense to me. I'm not reporting that it's happened. I'm just saying that, you know, if you're the Penguins and you say, look, the awkwardness is going to come at some point. It's going to come now. This is the best thing. This is how we're going to go about it. We're going to give these guys one last chance, but it just really, it can't happen here because of where guys are at. I don't know. We're all just throwing stuff against the wall because it's somewhat mystifying why Sid's contract hasn't been finalized. Like, this would not be a discussion point if they just got it done on 8-7 or earlier.
And that's the funny thing. Once you got past August 7th,
yeah,
it was like,
alarm bells went off.
Right?
I know. I know. Well,
hey, Jason, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking with you. Congrats on the new gig. I like going everywhere that I go now. I see you.
I know. And Jeff, if there's one person in Pittsburgh sports media I enjoy seeing every day, is you, my friend.
Jason,
I love it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Jeff. Take care.
Jason Mackey, columnist for the Post-Gazette, joining us here on 93.7 The Fan. Fan X is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. We continue. Right now, there's an NFL game going on. A Pitt Panther has an interception, and a Pitt Panther is at quarterback. Did they throw one to the other? Or what do the stats look like? We'll keep you updated on that. Plus, an idea in Major League Baseball that is one of the more insane things that I've ever heard. That is next as we continue. Jeff Hathorn with you as Fan Evening Shift here on 93.7 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Listen to the Joe Starkey Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. So the Patriots and Eagles are playing right now in Foxborough. Patriots lead at 10-3. Drake May 5 of 7 for 47 yards, has 2 rushes for 10 yards, including a touchdown. Jacoby Brissett was the quarterback before. He led them down into the red zone, went back to pass, threw one in the end zone, and picked off by Avante Maddox. The Pitt Panther ran it back about 45 yards to set up good field position for Kenneth Shane Pickett. Kenny has a field goal for the Eagles. He is 11 of 13 for 67 yards. No touchdowns or interceptions. He rushed twice for 6 yards. It is 10-3 New England as May was able to get into the end zone. Kenny settled for a field goal as those two Panthers go against each other. Here is the thing that according to a report on ESPN, MLB is, I love this phrase, kicking around the idea of requiring starting pitchers to work at least 6 innings. There are some caveats there. I don't know. There are some exceptions there. Now, at first, I love the way this is written by CBS Sports. At first blush, it might sound ridiculous. Yes, because it is ridiculous. So pitchers would have to go at least 6 innings unless before the 6th inning they threw their 100th pitch. Or they've given up 4 more earned runs, then you could replace them. Or they're hurt. Which I love that they had to put that in there. Because, you know, if they get hurt, like you still had to stay in there to the, like if your right arm broke and you were righty, you had to throw lefty until the end of 6 innings. I like the pace clock. It was needed. Hopefully it won't be needed again in the future because players and pitchers will just be used to doing what they used to do in baseball, which is not get out of the box and just go. They needed to do that because players have become so slow and used a strategy of trying to slow down a pitcher or they're running through too many damn signs, like, you know, looking in the dugout and, you know, looking for options, like just go. And they've done a marvelous job of that. This is insane. You'd force a pitcher to go 6 innings? Pitchers this year average, starting pitchers average about 5 1/3 innings. As CBS Sports put in their story, if you go back 40 years ago, so right now there have been 23 complete games and only 2 pitchers have multiple complete games. Kevin Gausman and Max Fried. Each have done it twice. 40 years ago, back in 84, the starting pitchers averaged 6 1/3 a start. 12 pitchers back in 84 had at least 11 complete games. Charlie Huff, who was a knuckleballer, had 17 complete games in a season. Would I rather see that? Yes. Do I want a rule where pitchers have to go 6? No.
And one thing I saw regarding that was if a pitcher is leaving because of injury, that pitcher then has to get forced to go on the injured list, I'm pretty sure.
What if it's a blister that is,
that's what I'm thinking too,
better by their next start, or they tweak something and it turns out they're okay?
So then maybe Major League Baseball can change the 15-day IL for pitchers back to 10, like position players.
Because what I want Major League Baseball doing is questioning an injury, where if somebody tweaks something and says, actually, I'm okay, and they say, nope, you're out at least a couple of starts. What if you just come down on your ankle wrong because of something on the mound, but it turns out you just rolled your ankle and you couldn't finish that day, but next day you're okay. Like that, come on, that's just silly. Pitt Panthers are continuing their training camp. They're just a couple of weeks from the start of their season. End of the month, Kent State here to start the year, and then the backyard brawl before you know it. Coming up, we're going to be joined by Chris Peek of PanthaLair.com, and he will break down what's going on over at Pitt. And I want to ask him this, too. Has the new coaching staff made, what kind of impact has that made on high school coaches and the recruiting for the Panthers? That as we continue, Jeff Hathorn with you. It's a Fan Evening Shift on 93.7 The Fan. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We go to that Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline and joined by Chris Peek of PanthaLair at pittsburgh.rival.com. And Chris, there's been so much talk about the Pirates. It was good for a long period of time. It has turned. And the Steelers. But what are some early impressions you have of Pitt football training camp?
Boy, there's a lot, Jeff. It's a lot, and I mean, like, you know as well as I do, we don't get to see a ton as media. But there's a lot going on with this team right now. There's a lot of interesting storylines that I think if Pitt wasn't coming off a 3-9 season last year, and if they sort of were a little bit more prominent in the city, I think a lot of people locally would be pretty interested. I mean, you have a complete 180 on the offensive scheme and the offensive philosophy of what Pat Narduzzi has done in hiring Cade Bell, the offensive coordinator from Western Carolina. I mean, it is unlike any offense we've ever seen Narduzzi even attempt to run in 10 years at Pitt. It's just going to be completely different. And that's not to say it's going to work. That's one of the big questions and storylines, but it's a complete change, and it's a drastic change. I mean, this isn't firing Matt Canada and hiring Arthur Smith, you know, like that's sort of a vanilla kind of move. And if anything, you know, getting a little bit more in line, maybe with what Mike Tomlin thinks or believes. This is going something completely opposite of what Pat Narduzzi as a defensive coordinator, you know, believes in. I mean, he's a guy who believes in time of possession and controlling the clock and running the ball. And Cade Bell is all about tempo. They're going to snap the ball fast. They want to snap it every 12 to 15 seconds. They want to go quick, play fast, score faster is his mantra. And it's the antithesis of what we've seen Narduzzi try to do, especially the last 2 years. And so it's really interesting to see how this is all going to play out. And I mean, we could get into the weeds on that position battle. Oh, they got 9 new starters on defense and there's a quarterback situation and this and that. But the reality is you have a guy who's in his 10th year as head coach going completely opposite to anything he's ever done before in terms of offensive philosophy. And I think it's just going to be fascinating to see what happens. Now, chances are it kind of operates in fits and starts, and there's times where it works and there's times where it doesn't. And we come out of it saying, I don't really know if that was a good idea or not. But it's fascinating to me to see Narduzzi make a move like this. And now we're getting close, you know, just a day or two over 2 weeks away from actually seeing it in action.
So we heard, and I guess Pat said this morning that Nate Yurnell is the starter, but Eli, I guess, is making it a little bit more interesting. Does what happened with Phil Jurkovec's struggles, does that change a mindset or the impact of when they can make a change? And do you think Nate makes it through camp as the starting quarterback?
So the first part there is really interesting to me, and I don't think it's anything Pat Narduzzi would really answer honestly. The biggest question that I would love to get an honest answer from Pat Narduzzi about is whether the experience last year changed how he himself will approach personnel decisions on offense. His thing has always been to be hands-off on offense. He lets the offensive coordinator decide the quarterback and the offensive coaches make the personnel decisions. He might have input, but he's not going to force anybody's hand. Well, after 5 games last season, he forced somebody's hand. And I think he did it again 5 games later when he forced him again. First to go from Phil Jurkovec to Christian Baier, and then to go from Christian Baier to Nate Yurnell. He has always been hands-off on it. And, for better or for worse, you know, I think he really prides himself on giving his coordinators autonomy. He felt like he had that autonomy from Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State, and he prides himself on giving his coordinators that autonomy as well. But you're the head coach, and you know, he can stand up there and say, I don't know anything about offense. Well, yeah, that's fine. You're a defensive guy, but Jeff, you and I could see that Phil Jurkovec was playing really poorly in the first 5 games. Pat Narduzzi has watched enough football. He's forgotten enough football to know that wasn't an acceptable level of play. And by halftime of the West Virginia game, it was clear to anyone who was watching.
I wish, and I don't think he'll ever answer it honestly, but I wish Narduzzi would give some indication into whether his mindset this year is different, that if he sees a problem, he will speak on it and force a change if he feels like he needs to. That to me is the biggest question. It's partially about how long of a leash does the starter actually have, but to me it's more about how long of a leash does the starter have with Narduzzi. Cade Bell, I don't know how he approaches his quarterbacks. Frank Cignetti was all in on Phil Dracovic, and he might have started that kid 12 games last year if Narduzzi didn't step in. I really think that's possible. It's more about will Narduzzi step in. As to these two guys, Nate Yarnell and Eli Holstein, it's gotten really interesting. Like you said, you know, today Pat said, oh, Nate's our starter. But, you know, there was sort of an implied, you know, right now. He didn't necessarily say he's our starter for the Kent State game. I think they have a scrimmage on Sunday. And if I had to bet, I would bet that scrimmage is going to go a long way in determining who gets the call. Because next week they'll practice, I think, maybe 3 days. I think they have a scrimmage on Sunday. I think they're off Monday, practice Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then they have like a walkthrough and then their kickoff luncheon. And then they're into game prep week for the Kent State game. Really, you're probably not going to win or lose the job during those three practices next week. You're going to win or lose it during this scrimmage. And how those guys respond to that pressure will be interesting, because Narduzzi said at the scrimmage on Saturday they were pressing a little bit, maybe trying to make too big of a play instead of taking what the defense gives them. How do they approach it this week? They got to take what the defense gives them, but they also have to make their case for why they should be the starter. I think it's very much an open competition. And I don't know who the favorite is right now. I think it'll be whoever plays better in this scrimmage on Saturday.
Chris Peek from
Sunday.
Chris Peek from Panther Lair. Yeah, I'll see you over at the scrimmage.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And you could see Chris's work at pittsburgh.rivals.com. And Chris, so we saw Georgia Tech for years where they kind of went to this option approach, probably as much from the mindset of like, hey, we're not going to get those type of athletes. Let's do something different. If Pitt tries to out pro style, especially in the NIL era, and you're going up against the big time schools for athletes, you're probably not going to win a lot of those battles. Does what they're doing make sense from a recruiting standpoint of like, hey, we can get some of these speedy guys that are probably under recruited, put them in a system, and that can help sustain us just because we don't have maybe some of the funds, to put it bluntly, or some of the resources that other schools have?
It's funny that you mentioned Georgia Tech. Did you see the news this week? They landed a 5-star offensive tackle
recruit.
Yes. $800,000. A five-star kid, reportedly an $800,000 NIL deal. Like, that's insane. Wow. Like, guaranteeing him that money, $800,000 a year. It's insane. We could probably spend a whole hour talking about that, so I won't get too sidetracked there. To your question, I mean, I think this season will be an interesting test case for that, because they're going to be going out there, a test case for the theory or the idea that if you have a good scheme that can get guys open, you can kind of scheme your way out of talent disadvantages, you know what I mean? Talent mismatches where the other team might be more talented, but if your scheme is good and it gets guys open and puts them in position to make plays, you can still make it happen. So this year will be an interesting test case for that, because they're going to have Sensor Lee. They're going to have Raphael Poppy Williams. They're going to have Desmond Reed, three guys who came from Western Carolina, you know, three undersized but fast guys who were FCS players. They're going to, you know, who have excelled in this offensive scheme. And now you'll put them in that scheme playing against ACC competition, and you'll see if it works. Now, I don't think you render a full judgment on this offensive system after 1 year, but as a test case of like, hey, you know, can this work? Can this be a way? Because that was, I mean, you go back years. I mean, you mentioned Georgia Tech. You go back to like what Rich Rodriguez was doing, what a lot of, you know, the onset of the spread offense, a lot of it was to offset some of the talent disadvantages or mismatches where, you know, we're not going to get the linemen that Alabama gets, you know what I mean? Or, you know, this small school is not going to get, but we can get like the fast receivers who can fit into this scheme, and we can run it, and we can go fast, and we can scheme them open. I mean, the air raid offense, I mean, all of these different offensive innovations we've seen over the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years in college football, I feel like 75%, maybe more of them have been aimed at offsetting a talent mismatch. You know, like, we're not going to get that level of talent. What can we do with the scheme to get our guys open and give them a chance to make plays? And then can we find the right guys the guys who are getting overlooked, he's an inch too short, but he's crazy fast, so we'll get him the ball in space and we'll let him go out and make plays. That's what they're going to try and do this year. And so I think this will be a great test case for it.
How are recruits or local, even local coaches reacting to this move? Is it a very much, hey, let's see how this works? Are they buying into a whole new look Pitt offense? What's been that reaction?
I think some of the new coaches, on the recruiting front, I think they've done a good job with their energy. This is a younger coaching staff than what Pitt had last year. It's a more energetic coaching staff. We talked to Jacob Bernowski, the tight ends coach and special teams coordinator today. He might be in his 20s. I'm not sure. He's just really young, but he's got so much energy. Cade Bell has so much energy. Tim Dallas, the offensive line coach they brought in, has so much energy. Lindsay Lamar, the running backs coach, isn't that much older than the guys in his room. J.J. Lasser, the receivers coach, kind of the same thing. There's a lot of energy, and I think the players are responding well to it, and I think the recruits are too. With the offense itself, it's all wait and see, because it's like, well, yeah, you got all these good ideas. Your offense looks good on the board. Let's see if it can actually play. Let's see if it can actually work. But I think they're responding to the energy. And, locally, I think there's some of that as well. I think there's been some good reactions. But when you look at the commitments they've gotten, a lot of the kids have just talked about how they've been able to relate to these coaches, connect with these coaches, and ultimately just sort of respond to that energy that they bring. And you see it in practice, and sometimes it can be as simple as, you replace a few coaches, you get some new voices in there that can bring an extra pep to everybody's step. And sometimes it really is because, look, man, Dave Borbély was a pretty old guy. Andre Powell was getting up in years. Tim Salem was in his 60s somehow, although nobody would accuse him of being short of energy. although that was, artificially infused energy from his performance enhancing what have you was Mountain Dew. But those guys were older. These guys are younger. And I hate to overly simplify it, but they brought a lot of energy to the program, and I think it's wearing off on the recruits. You go 3-9 or 5-7, nobody cares how energetic you are. You got to back it up with the wins, but during this period before the games are actually played, I think they're getting a good response.
Charlie Partridge obviously is a big loss defensively. Assistant head coach, obviously, done a great job recruiting. I know they've replaced with a guy who's energetic, and that group seems to be buying in. What do you think the impact of Charlie not being there, and maybe what is a coaching add to the defensive side impacted this group?
It'll be interesting. I don't know what to make of this defensive line. They're basically replacing everybody. The only guy you would even call returning starter is Nate Temple. Who started, I think, most of the games last year at defensive end. But he had an injury in the spring that was initially sold to us as a season-ending injury. But I don't think that's quite the case. I think he's going to be back. But, so you might get a half season or something out of him. So that's the only thing even close to a returning starter they have. I think at defensive end, they're probably going to be starting, their four-man rotation at defensive end will probably be two transfers, a redshirt freshman and a true freshman, or a redshirt sophomore and a true freshman. Their rotation at defensive tackle is going to be all new guys as well, transfers and young guys and redshirt freshmen and stuff like that. And so Tim Doust has his work cut out for him. He's got a whole new group to mold, and that's not the worst thing. They weren't exactly the most impactful unit last year, the defensive line. And I think it's kind of interesting to look at defensive end recruiting in particular over the last few years. It's taken a little bit of a dip. This most recent class, these guys who are freshmen right now, they look really good. But the recruiting for the past 4 or 5 years prior to that kind of took a bit of a dip at defensive end. And so I'm not going to say that Tim Doust came into an empty cupboard, but he's had to restock quite a bit. That's why they're going to start at least one transfer and have another one in the rotation. So he's got his work cut out for him building that group. I think the tackles will be good. Here's an interesting factoid, Jeff. The defensive tackles at Pitt, there are more former four-star prospects in the defensive tackle room than any other position on the team, which I think is really interesting.
Wow.
They have eight scholarship defensive tackles. Six of them are former four-star guys. Now, maybe that reflects on the ranking system because a bunch of these guys haven't done anything yet, but at some point the pedigree was there. So I think some of that talent's going to shine through. I think the tackles will be okay. But I think defensive end is going to be a question mark for this team all season. And That's not good. They need to be able to get penetration and get into the backfield. So that's going to be a big position to watch. I feel pretty good about the rest of the defense, but those two end spots, I'm not sure what's going to happen there.
Have you, or how tempted have you been to say, hey, Pat, Deion Sanders said?
I mean, no, because Narduzzi started it. You know, like Pat took a not so thinly veiled shot at Deion Hayes. And that was why Deion Sanders said what he said. Was that this week that he said it?
Yeah.
My weeks are running together. But I mean, that's why he said it. And I think there was even, he kind of like implied like that Deion asked him to say something.
Like, he did.
Deion Sanders was standing up for his kids. You know,
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.